Hey, nerds. Welcome to episode 522 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam all by myself today for the intro before I get to a super fun interview with my new buddy, Genevieve Gornishek, who is the debut author of the just spectacular book, The Witch's Heart. The Witch's Heart is so fun, so just like escapist fantasy. It is all about a little known witch in the Norse mythologies that even if you're familiar with, you likely haven't heard of this particular character. Her name's Angerboda, and we're going to get all into it when Genevieve is on in just a few minutes here. I will just say, if you're a fan of Circe by Madeline Miller, past guest on the show, or if you're a fan of Norse mythology by Neil Gaiman, not past guest on the show, you'll love this book. It's just fantastic. Genevieve is local to me. She is living in Cleveland, yet we were still on Zoom. Little fun note about the podcast. This week, Genevieve is on, and next week, the author that is going to be on is all the way from New Zealand, so a global podcast for you. But she studied Norse myths and Icelandic sagas when she was at college and just developed a passion for it. She is in a kind of Viking reenactment group that we talk about. This is just so much fun. I think you guys are really, really going to love it. Yeah, it's gotten me just so, I love all of it. It's got me thinking about ships and the sea and sea shanties, of course, and music and listening. Actually, I tweeted this out as the podcast last week, but asked if people listen to music while they read. I've been very into a whole lot of jazz lately as my background music, lots of John Coltrane. And so let me know, send us a tweet or an email if you listen to music while you're reading. I'm just curious. This is just not for anything in particular. Just like hearing from you guys. If you want to get a hold of us, of course, you can always reach us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com is our email address, at ProBookNerds on Twitter and Instagram. And if you haven't yet, if you want to leave us a review, we really appreciate it. iTunes or Spotify or iHeartRadio or wherever you happen to listen to your podcasts. It helps people find us a little bit more easily. We really appreciate it. Also, and this will be the last thing before I let you get to the interview. If you didn't listen to last week's episode on Thursday, Jill and I discussed the books that we don't enjoy, specifically a few of them, and why, the reasons behind it. So that was the most requested thing anyone has ever asked us for. So many of you said you wanted to hear that. So I hope you enjoyed it. We took a lot of time, a lot of care with it. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. But if you haven't heard it yet, go check it out. I think that is just about everything. So I will let you get to this just super fun conversation with my new buddy, Genevieve Gornishek, on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. You're in Cleveland too, right?
Yes. So I just listened to your interview with Alexis Henderson yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And where you mentioned you were in Cleveland, I was like, oh, I'm in Cleveland too.
Actually, so I started the recording before. So what I'll do is, do you just kind of want to kick us off by introducing our listeners to The Witch's Heart, and then we'll jump around from there?
Okay. Hi, I'm Genevieve Gornishek. I wrote The Witch's Heart, which is a reimagining of Norse mythology from the point of view of the giantess Angerboda, who is best slash only known as the mother of Hel, Fenrir, and Jormungand by none other than our favorite trickster, Loki.
Yeah, okay, so I want to jump off right with Angerboda. I'm going to say this wrong like six times.
It's totally okay. But one of my friends listened to the audiobook snippet that's on my publisher's website, and she was like, wow, I've been pronouncing everything wrong. I'm like, it's really fine.
Yeah, I feel like with Norse mythology and like especially like the Icelandic sagas, like you just have no chance really of getting any of these right. But I got super excited because it reminded me a lot of like Circe that Madeline Miller wrote, with the fact that this particular character, like you said, is very off center in the sense of like we don't know much about her. So what drew you into wanting to tell and reimagine her story as opposed to, you know, like picking someone more centrally focused?
That's a great question. So I noticed when I was taking a Norse mythology class in college, which I was so lucky to have the opportunity to do, that Angerboda had a lot of like associations in common with a couple other women in the mythology. And I feel like if I had picked anyone else, I would have had to like start from scratch and just kind of make things up. And my academic brain like would not let me do that. Not to say I didn't take liberties in the book, which I absolutely did. But so there's a couple other women in the mythology, for example, who have associations with like wolves and snakes and like prophecy. So I kind of like just combined them all together and was able to kind of flesh out her story from there. So that's what really drew me to her, was like the idea that there was kind of something deeper there, that maybe the people who wrote down the myths over a thousand years ago, ish, you know, 800 years ago ish, maybe didn't care about or kind of didn't want to expand upon because they just weren't interested in it, which is a big thing for a lot of the women in the myths and sagas.
Yeah, they unfortunately don't tend to be as, like I said, like centrally focused, because be serious, it's usually men that were probably writing the stories. So the one thing I do love, like I said, as a person who also loves Norse mythology but didn't obviously study it to level that you did, like because of the fact of who she is the mother of, like it was almost like little, like when she would have one of the children in the story, I would get all excited, be like, oh wait, okay, this is starting to click now. It is so fun. So you mentioned doing, you know, having the class, which is really cool. I will say, when I went to school, I got to take like Greek and Roman mythology, but we didn't have Norse mythology though as an option, which I would have loved. But like having Angerboda's story not be super prevalent, that, or at least not easily found in places, like what was your research process like? Like where were you finding snippets that you could build your story out from?
So that is also a great question. I actually wrote my term paper in that class about Angerboda's associations with other women in this mythology. So I kind of took a look at some of the weirder, creepier women and just kind of noticed, like throughout just reading the Eddas, that like that they had some things in common. So like the giantess Hyrokin, who rides to Baldur's funeral on the back of a wolf with snakes for reins, like what other giantess in the mythology has an association with snakes and wolves? Angerboda. Ah. And so like it's that kind of like thought process that kind of got me through it, like being like, ooh, there could be a connection here, a tenuous connection admittedly, but you know, maybe all giantesses have these associations, I don't know. But I was like, wouldn't it be cool though if they were all secretly the same person?
Well, and I love that, like you said, you took some liberties, but you stay close to the stories that all you know already exist. And what I love about Norse mythology, and I'm curious if you feel the same way, same things with like Greek and Roman mythology, these stories are fictional, but they believe them to be basically like their religion, and to such a, it's almost like the way like the Bible is for like Roman Catholics. It's like, these are fictional stories, but so many people believe them to be like structurally foundational to their existence. Like, did you feel like you needed to stay close to that existing story because they are so ingrained and like almost as if it is like, you know, fact versus fiction?
Kinda. I mean, that is a great question too. Sorry, I keep saying that.
No, it's okay. I appreciate it. That's much better than you being like, oof, Adam, that's a rough one.
But I kind of treated it almost as if like I was writing fan fiction. Like I didn't want to stray too far from canon. Like this is what we know. And this is kind of, in a way, I was fortunate about the things that we didn't know because I could take those liberties. So like if there was a gap, I could be like, well, it doesn't say that this doesn't happen, so why don't I just make it happen? So it was that kind of thought process. And the fact that the myths were so, like the Viking Age was, you know, it at least in Iceland, it ended about 1,000 years ago. And then the myths were written down like 200 years after that. So we're already like 200 years removed from the people who actually worshipped the Norse gods. So there's like several layers of bias to kind of unpack there.
So I think it would be really hard to say exactly, like, for certain what people in the Viking Age would have believed about the gods. But the poems, at least, we think that they were passed down pretty much intact, because just because of the way the poetry is constructed, if you change like one syllable, you change the whole thing. Did you watch Avatar: The Last Airbender?
I know. It's actually, it's on my list of things. I'm so bad at watching stuff, but go ahead. I know that a lot of people listening absolutely.
There's this one part where Sokka tries to invade this like haiku club because it's a bunch of pretty girls, and he ends up saying haiku, and he's like one syllable off, and they're like one syllable, and they kick him out, and that's kind of how I figure that Skaldic and Eddic poetry, which is like the Norse myths and sagas and stuff, utilize that kind of poetry. And it was so complicated that if you change one syllable, like people who know their stuff are going to be like, like wrong. So it's that kind of thing, and that enabled this poetry to get passed down in the oral tradition probably until it was written down. And I just think that's really cool. So to answer your question long term, like, I feel like the poems might be closer to what the, you know, people in the Viking Age might have believed about the gods. And that's a whole nother fun thing, because some of those poems are hilarious.
That's okay. So, like, not to keep like thinking about like with the Bible and stuff, but it's almost like the opposite of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Like the Dead Sea Scrolls, when people, like, when they discover them and they're like rolling them out, they get, there's like these little tiny fragments that are still in existence, and they're just like, and so from this fragment we can ascertain, and then they make leaping, you know, guesses. But like this, like you said, it does have the whole story intact, because that's so interesting that as like a researcher you're able to see like, oh yeah, no, this was probably the whole thing because of how it's written. That's so interesting.
Yeah it's really cool.
So I think I saw you do an interview, like, did you read these stories in their like native, like the original languages?
So I took a class on Old Norse, and that's where all of this started. So I'm like by no means fluent, but I have my little dictionary, and there's a couple of the myths that we did translate in class that I got to learn some fun little tidbits about while I was, you know, working on translating them with a bunch of other people in a classroom. But it was really cool.
That's okay. That is insanely interesting. Like, I also feel like that's the type of class where you find out that you're translating something that you find out really quickly if you're interested or not, because of the, I have to imagine that's a very time consuming, slow process. Like, how does that work?
We did it line by line. So like we'd get assigned different, you know, I'd get a stanza and the next person would get a stanza. But we actually started off not with a poem, but with the story where Loki gives birth to a horse. That was the first thing I ever translated. And that was like, because I had read Norse mythology as a kid, but none of it really had stuck with me. And then taking this class, I was like, I just remembered how weird this was, and I just want to go read the rest of it now. So I like bought a bunch of books and just went to town.
I really thinking about like all of the crazy stories that are in Norse mythology in general, like, it's kind of insane that like one of the biggest Marvel characters and storylines is like Thor and Loki and Odin. Like, it's really crazy that it's able to like explode on such a cultural level, because they really are, like, Loki gives birth as a horse to an eight-legged horse, and everyone's just like, that sounds cool. Like, it really is interesting to me that, like, of all the mass media things that people find interesting in comics, they're just like, everyone just accepts, like, yeah, there's a tree and there's nine realms and it's all good. Like, are you also a fan of the, like, the way that Marvel is depicting these things as well?
I got into like Norse mythology like in school a little bit before before the first Thor movie came out, and I kind of used Marvel as like an extension of my obsession with Norse mythology. But in my brain I was able to like compartmentalize it and be like, okay, this is totally different, so I'm not gonna get mad about inaccuracies. Like, Thor and Loki are not brothers. Like,
right, there's like no real, he's more so a brother of Odin than, and it's not even like an actual brother.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So you said that you discovered this through this college course, but have you always had an interest in these types of like sagas and myths and things like that before? I guess, like, what were some of the content and stories and things you were reading when you were growing up?
I really liked Greek mythology, like super, super into Greek mythology. The Percy Jackson books came out while I was in high school and I devoured them. Like I had, you know, Disney's Hercules and all of that stuff. I was just super into it. So I guess in a way, like, Norse mythology was kind of a natural transition for me. Like, but even though I really enjoyed Greek mythology, I never thought too much about where it came from. Like, if you ask me the source of like this poem or that like story, I don't know. I just know what I read in like my children's books about Greek mythology. And so Norse mythology was like a deep dive in comparison, but it was a natural transition.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you realize that you wanted to not only enjoy and read these types of stories, but that you wanted to take the next step? And I don't want to say like wrote fan fiction, but you did, like you said, like write about these types of things. And again, this isn't to knock fan fiction. It's incredible.
Right.
Absolutely. The internet decided to do that a few weeks ago. And
yes, the Twitter discourse.
Jesus.
We love to see it.
Yeah, but it's like, when did you realize like, oh, I actually want to extend beyond just reading these stories, and I would actually like to spend a lot of time working on these stories myself?
It was that class.
Was it?
Okay. When I was writing my term paper, I actually wrote the first draft of The Witch's Heart in 3 weeks for NaNoWriMo.
Oh my
it just
God.
Would not get out of my head. I was like, but it, you know, to be fair, writing that first draft, I had all of Norse mythology itself as like the bones of the story. So it's not like I had to really plot anything. I just kind of had to be like, okay, what would Ankerboda have been doing right now? Sitting in her cave for the most part. That's kind of, that was like the most frustrating part of writing this story, is like, do something. But yeah.
Okay. So along those same lines, in that first draft, because so many people who have done NaNoWriMo that are authors are like famously, like I interviewed Erin Morgenstern a few years ago, and like she's like adamant, because everyone's like, oh, The Night Circus was written during NaNoWriMo. And she always tells everyone, she's like, I love that I'm like the poster child for NaNoWriMo. She's like, but basically 4 words from that NaNoWriMo script became part of The Night Circus. She's like, the rest of it I rewrote. So in relation to your story, because like you said, Ankerboda, what I love about how you put this together is like, it really is her story. And like, yeah, we get snippets of what's, you know, going on in, you know, Asgard and everything else, but it's really her story. Like in that original draft, did you have her in the cave, like centered as the main driving force, or were you trying to like wrestle with, okay, how do I make it her story but still make it like a Norse mythology story?
It has always been her story from the very beginning, and large swaths of the of part one of the book are the same as they were in 2011 when I first wrote this book. But part two was rewritten 3 times, I think, since I signed with my publisher, with Ace. My editor was like, you know, the original ending is very sad and terrible. It was just bad. And my editor basically saved everyone from having to read this like terrible ending. And she knows this, I've thanked her for it. But she was like, I think that you could craft a better ending that's more satisfying to the reader without compromising the source material that you, she's like, I know what you're doing here, but I think that you could do better. And I'm like, thank you. And it took me 2 more tries, but I'm really proud of it. But like the entire like second half of the book has been rewritten. I think there's like 3 scenes that were more or less the same as they were. But yeah, part one, I changed very little.
I was just gonna say, even having written the first draft, like you said, in 3 weeks, that's still really impressive that like the first part, the majority of it really is similar. I do love, you were mentioning, you were joking about like having her, like wanting her to do something. I do love where it's almost like you speed the story along, because there are passages early on in the book where it's just like, you just like pipe, like in a sentence or two, you're just like, so the season passed.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like, listen, reader, we're trying to get to the good stuff.
Right.
She made some salves. Trust me on this.
Yep. And her, you know, she's like this like ageless, deathless witch, and like time just moves really wonky for her, which is why like in the second half, she's like, oh, just gonna wander and, you know, follow my instinct. And then she's like, oh God, my daughter's all grown up. Like, spoiler alert, but it's just like time just doesn't have a really an effect on her.
Well, and she even, you even have her kind of mention that at the very beginning when like she first meets Loki and they become initially friends and then more so. It's like, he, I think he even asked something like, well, how long have you been here? Like, and she's like, I don't know. Like, she's just like sitting by a, like a, she's like sitting by a, you know, a body of water. And she's like, who knows?
It's 10 years. It is.
Could have been,
I could have been literally sitting here on this, against this tree for 10 years. Could have been 10 years since I left Asgard yet. Like, 100%.
Well, yeah. And I, one of the things I love about your version of her, and I'm assuming this is like the way that you read her as well, is like, she's like nothing. She's unflappable, cannot be flapped. Like, she takes everything in stride, and it's just like Loki tells her he has another wife, and she's just like, is she pretty? And it's just like,
yeah,
I don't know, like the way that she chooses to be, the things that she chooses to be angry about, it's just like, it's written in a way as a woman who has lived like generations of time. Like, I just, is that how she's conveyed in the ways that you were able to find her, or is that something that you built out yourself?
I built that out myself. Mm-hmm. That was I mean, when I say that she's mentioned once in each of the Eddas, and both times just in relation to Loki. Like, she doesn't get any lines, she doesn't do anything, she just exists and is the mother of these children. So yeah, all of that came from me.
Yeah.
And part of developing her character is kind of like, okay, I'm making her this ancient witch with this like phenomenal cosmic power that she may may not be able to completely like access or even want to use. So like, what kind of person would she be to not use this power to like storm Asgard and be like, I'm changing fate? And I think that that's what people are expecting, and I'm sorry to those people. Like, it was really hard to make her do anything because I didn't want to change. Like, it had to end in Ragnarok. Like, it had to. And so I was like, okay, like, how would this woman with all this power, like, what kind of person would she have to be to not like use it to,
yeah, you know? It's like, you know, you said the great cosmic power thing. It's almost, it's like the genie, like the great cosmic power, like itty bitty living space. Yeah, I picked up on that. Yeah, it's like, it is. It's like, she has this massive ability, which readers will find out about very early on, what she can do if they're not familiar. And she really, like, there's one time early-ish that she takes advantage of it and to facilitate keeping one of her children alive. I'm trying to like really dodge, like, I don't want to like give things away, but it is, it's like, and even then she's like, oof, I'm not gonna do that again, like that, I don't know how. Yeah, it is, it's almost like a study in like, not like temperance, but like in how to like not overuse a thing that like that you have, like this power. It really is, it's just like such an interesting dichotomy, I guess.
Right. And then when she does overuse it, there are serious consequences. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, no spoilers, but that scene at the river.
Yeah. Where
she really like unleashes her power. Like, that was a terrible decision.
Yeah. It's like, oh God.
Yeah.
I want to take a quick break to talk about today's sponsor, and it is our friends at Literati. Great children's books open up new worlds for discovery, and with Literati Kids, your child can explore uncharted places every single month with spellbinding stories handpicked by experts. You guys have heard us talk about Literati before, and if you're not a part of this just wonderful group yet, I don't know what you're waiting for, but Literati Kids is a try before you buy subscription book club. Each month, Literati delivers 5 vibrantly illustrated children's books, bringing the immersive magic of reading right to your home. Literati's age-based book clubs ensure appropriate reads for your budding bookworm, whether they're snuggling with you for story time or letting their imagination roam free. Each book bundle is thoughtfully tailored by education experts with 5 stories meant to spark new interests and nurture a healthy curiosity. You don't have to worry about sorting through hundreds of titles anymore and wondering what you're going to be able to bond over with your kid. Literati is just going to send you these incredible children's literature titles, and you choose to purchase the ones that they love, and you send the rest back for free. No worries about it. No, you know, no struggle or no issues. You know, from art and adventure to tales and compassion to tales of compassion, Literati Box follows a new enriching theme. Each Literati box follows a new enriching theme with personalized extras like stickers, surprises, and special guest artwork. Every box is fun and a fresh adventure. See, this is why I don't always read the copy from Literati, because I love the product so much. And when I read the copy, I fall over my own words. Listen, I've been giving this to my nieces and nephews for over a year now. I get videos from my siblings every single time one of the boxes come. It doesn't matter if my niece is who's 2 years old is opening it up, or if my nephew who is 10 is opening it up. They know that that is stuff for them and they get excited. And it's just the best. And knowing that they're going to enjoy story time. And not only are the kids going to get new adventures, but my siblings as adults are going to get to read new books. So they're not reading the same book over and over and over again. Head to literati.com/probooknerds for 25% off your first two orders. Select your child's book club and start them on a literary journey like no other. That's literati.com/probooknerds. It's the only place you're going to find 25% off your first two orders of this one-of-a-kind book subscription. It's the most joyful way to foster a lifelong love of learning. That's literati.com/probooknerds. Do you see yourself, and I imagine yes, but I don't want to make assumptions. Are you like, is this the realm that you want to continue writing? Because there really isn't a ton of Norse reimaginings or retellings. I mean, there's the Neil Gaiman one, which is more so just like him being like, here's an approachable way to take on Norse mythology. But like, do you want to keep telling stories in this area? Because there's so many of them that you could tell.
Yes. 100%. That is my goal, because I'm so deep in this. Like, I'm also a Viking reenactor. So
yeah, I want to talk about that.
I'm too deep in like the study of all of this stuff. I almost went to grad school for it too. So It was like, yeah, I will probably continue on in this vein. If I am allowed to, I would be grateful to.
Yeah. Okay. Viking reenactor. For people who don't know, who haven't looked at your bio, Genevieve and I are both in Cleveland, which is just hilarious that in a normal world, I would just be like, you should come to our office and we would talk in person. But this isn't the normal world. We are doing this via Zoom, much like everything else. I have lived in this area all my life. I don't know where does like Viking reenactments take place here, or are these elsewhere? Tell me everything about this.
Oh, they're here. They are here. I don't know if you've been out to the Great Lakes Medieval Fair in Geneva, but that's where I met my group. And so they're out that way. And there's also like in Cleveland, there is a Jomsborg, which is like a worldwide organization of Viking Age enthusiasts.
Yeah.
They do a lot of combat. And they are here in Cleveland too, like their chapter, I think. I don't know. their chapter just formed a couple years ago and is still like developing, and they're really cool people. I've gotten a chance to hang out with them a couple times. Okay. So yeah, it is happening in Cleveland.
Okay. Well, this is huge breaking news for me. I'm excited about this. Is it like, and I forgive me, I'm not familiar. Like, is it like live action role play, or is it like cosplay, or is it like putting on performances like you would see at like a Ren fair? Like what does this all entail?
So that's a super, super great question. It is living history. At least like I can speak for my group, it is living history. We are trying to kind of reconstruct a whole way of life. So we'll like go to these events and we'll live in tents for a weekend and we'll cook over a campfire. And I have an 8-foot tall warp weighted loom in the corner of my room, like to make these crafts. So I got the opportunity to do a lot of the stuff that my characters do in The Witch's Heart, like do tablet weaving and do knoll binding, which is like this Viking Age kind of knitting is the closest thing I can compare it to. But you know, like it's so cool. But it's not like we kind of have like, oh, this is my Viking name, but like I'm still me. I'm not pretending to be somebody else. I'm kind of pretending to be me as I might have been 1,000 years ago, like in, you know, as a Scandinavian peasant farmer.
This is, well, I mean, listen, you've got the blonde hair. I like, are you, is your family, like, is your ancestry from that area of the world?
Yes. My grandfather's actually from Sweden. I got to live there for 4 months when I was an undergrad. And when I came back, I immediately took the Old Norse class and the rest was history. But when I was actually living in Sweden, I was like, oh, look, a rune stone. That's cool. Like, I don't know anything about Vikings. Yeah. Missed opportunities.
Yeah, seriously. I was just going to say, I interviewed Ken Follett last year. I don't remember time anymore, but I think it was last year. And his most recent book is based in the Dark Ages. And like a lot of it came from, he went to the, there's, it's all, it's, a lot of it involved Vikings. And mm-hmm. he went to the, and I can't remember, I want to say Sweden, but now I'm thinking maybe Norway. There's like a Viking longship museum.
Yeah, that's in Norway.
Yeah. And
the
he's
Oslo
like
ships museum.
Yeah. And like, there's yeah. a whole, they have a whole epic poem that's like all around the wall, I think, or something.
Oh, that's
like,
so cool. I haven't been there, but oh, that's so cool.
It was, and that was, and he was telling me like the amount of information that he was able to take from just being in that, like, because they have like a full size Viking longboat like there and all this stuff. And yeah, and I'm like, just, I'm like with you, like I'm just like, I really want to go see that type of thing. It sounds amazing.
That is goals. I got the chance to visit Birka, Sweden in 2019, yeah, before 2020, pre all of this. Mm-hmm. And I guess I missed, they have a whole like little Viking village set up, and I missed the reenactors by like 2 weeks. I was there in June. They're like, oh, they don't get here till July. I was like, darn it.
So is your, like, does your group, and obviously, like you said, no one knows when we're going to be able to leave our little Zoom rooms again, but
right.
Are you like, do you guys have long-term plans of going and like spending some time in like Sweden or Norway or Denmark to like do these types of things?
I think that's goals for a lot of us. A lot of us have gone over individually mm-hmm. and kind of hung out with people. But as far as like all of us going as a group, I feel like I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That would be so cool. Like so many of us want to go, but
mm-hmm. that's, oh man, I'm like, I'm super into this. This is so cool.
Thank you.
I like am obsessed with all of this. This is amazing. And are you also, you're also working like full-time as well, right?
Yes.
So how do you like break up your time? Because I, you know, when I talk to people who are currently full-time authors, they'd be like, well, I mean, this is my job, so I'll, it's not as challenging, but like as someone personally who's trying to write a novel while also working full-time, it's like, I struggle to find the time. So how do you mm-hmm. sort of break up your day so that you are able to fulfill your obligations of like working on another novel and doing all these types of things?
Honestly, I used to have an additional job, so I'm still kind of getting into the swing of not having an additional job and having more time and deciding how to organize my time, because I'm very lucky because my work from home job as a marketing copywriter is pretty flexible. Like they're kind of like, hey, as long as you put in the work between these hours ish like and get all your work done, like you don't have to clock in right at 9 and do 9 to 5, like you can kind of they're flexible. So for me, it's either like getting up earlier or going to bed later. And I used to, like when I wrote The Witch's Heart, I was a night owl. Like I would stay up until like 3 a.m. those 3 weeks and like finish, you know, whatever section I was working on, because there's no chapters. I'm sorry. I wish I would have put chapters in the book.
It's okay. But here's the thing I will say, not to cut you off. I am someone who, when I get to the end of a chapter, when I'm reading, it's almost like in my brain, I'm like, you deserve a break. And then like, I'll get distracted and stop reading for a while with your book, just because it's like No. It was great because I just kept going. I was just like, oh, don't worry about it. And I don't think you need it. You do have the breaks, like the.
Yeah, the section breaks.
Yeah. So I think it works.
Yeah.
I liked it. I'm here for it. I don't care if anyone else complains.
I appreciate it. I feel like if somebody's like having trouble getting into the book, which like, it's not for everybody. No book is for everybody. But if somebody's having trouble getting into it, they'd be like, "Ugh, when can I stop reading?" But people who are super into it might be like, "Oh my God, this is a trap. I don't know where to stop." So like, either way, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay. So towards the end of our podcast, we have what we like to call the Nerd 9, just 9 lighthearted questions. Not that I was like grilling you for the past half hour or anything. But the first one is, what's the last book you finished reading?
Last book I finished reading was The Unbroken by C.L. Clarke.
Nice. Do you have a favorite place to read?
Usually in coffee shops, but in light of COVID, my room or my living room.
I miss coffee shops so much.
Me too. I got so much done there.
And there's so many, listen, in Northeast Ohio, there's so, we have so many lovely coffee shops between. So upsetting. Do you remember the book that made you fall in love with reading when you were younger?
Oh boy. I don't. I read everything as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like there was no one book.
Yeah, that's okay. That works. This is, I think you may have sort of answered this, but when you're allowed to travel again, where is one place you'd like to go that you have not yet been to?
Iceland.
Yeah, see, with you, it was like, this is a pretty, I was one of the rare people where I was like, I think I know what Jennifer's going to say. But do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm a Christmas girl. I love Halloween, but Christmas is just, there's something about the coziness of Christmas that I just love.
Yeah. Plus, again, for people who aren't from this area, they don't understand that, like, from November through like May, we Northeast Ohioans don't see the sun really. Like it's a perfect gray. It's gray and cloudy today. We Genevieve and I just both looked out our windows because it's the same. It's the same.
It's time. Been gray for like 3 months.
Yeah, and so
the last time we saw the sun, I don't remember.
Yeah, and so Christmas at least is like that one shining light in this area, especially yeah. where we're all like, well, it's gray, but it's holiday and gray, so it's okay.
Right. Exactly.
Are you a coffee person or a tea person?
Coffee in the morning, tea in the evening. That's how I roll.
Yeah. Cats or dogs?
Cats. Dogs are good. Dogs are very good. Dogs are very, very good. I just will always have a soft spot for cats.
That's okay. Do you have a favorite food?
Oh my gosh, sushi.
Yeah. And then if you could have dinner with one person, alive or dead, who would you pick?
Such a hard question.
I know. I'm sorry. More people have yelled at this question than like answered it straight away, if I'm being honest.
Oh, I'm like, I'm trying to choose like a ridiculous character from the Icelandic sagas because they're like semi-historical.
Like, you know what? I'm going to count it. That works.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I'm having trouble.
That's okay.
I'm like totally blanking.
Sorry, I can edit all this out anyway. Don't you worry about
it. There's a saga character named Eil Skaltagrimsson, and he's just absolutely ridiculous. And I just like want to have a meal with him and just be like, can you compose some poetry, please? Like, he's like one of the Icelandic warrior poets from the sagas. And he's just like this big dude. He's canonically described as like kind of being like ugly. And he just like kills people and composes poetry and vomits on people, and it's just great. It's just great. It's a great saga.
That is also a low-key powerful name too. That's amazing.
Yeah. Right.
Oh man. Okay, last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from reading your book?
I hope that they take away that there's always hope, even if everything seems like it's stacked against you and the, you know, the odds are pretty well not in your favor, that you know you can still find the strength inside yourself to kind of succeed and prevail in the face of whatever you're up against.
That's absolutely perfect. Genevieve, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. This was so awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
There is no hood like parenthood. When you meet a fellow parent, you just kind of get each other on a whole nother level. Hi, I'm Kanika Chanda Gupta. I'm a former CNN journalist, mom of three, including twins, and host of That's Total Mom Sense, the podcast. I interview change makers on their life lessons, legacy, and superpower of intuition, aka their mom sense and dad sense. I've had some pretty amazing parents on my show.
Hey, what's up? I'm Kelly Rowland.
Hi, this is Chelsea Clinton.
It's me, Bobby Brown. Can't wait to share my story.
Episodes release every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. Join my tribe at thatstotalmomsense.com and follow me on Instagram at Kanika Chanda Gupta. I'm thrilled to be on this journey with you.